You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more.
Hi, this is Paul Lazarus. In the 1980s, I produced and hosted a radio series called Anything Goes, a celebration of the American musical theater. Now the Broadway Podcast Network is bringing back these shows. Today, part one of a four-part look at the career of Broadway composer Burton Lane. Lane is best known for his remarkable scores for Finian's Rainbow and On a Clear Day, You Can See Forever. This program was originally broadcast in 1981.
In olden days, a glimpse of stocking was looked on as something shocking, but now God knows anything goes.
Good afternoon. Today's edition of Anything Goes is the first of two programs examining the work of composer Burton Lane. Mr. Lane's numerous theater and film scores include Royal Wedding, On a Clear Day You Can See Forever, Babes on Broadway, and the classic Finian's Rainbow. Over the years, Mr. Lane has collaborated with most of the great lyricists, including Yip Harburg, Alan J. Lerner, Ira Gershwin, and Dorothy Fields. For the next hour and a half, you'll be listening to a pre-recorded interview with the composer and many of Mr. Lane's delightful songs. I'm Paul Lazarus. I hope you'll join me this Sunday and next as Anything Goes saunters down memory lane. Born in New York in 1912, in February. Did you grow up your whole life in New York City, pretty much?
Well, my youth was spent in New York, yes. I was born here, I went to school here, although I didn't go very long to school. I think my last year in school was freshman year at High School of Commerce. Don't ask me how I got to the High School of Commerce. When I was in high school, my freshman year in high school, I got a contract with Remix. I also had a contract with the Schuberts to write a show. I was 15 or 16 years old.
How did you get that contract?
A friend of my father's knew Harold Stern. Harold Stern, in those days, not only was a conductor of a band that played during the summer months at Manhattan Beach, but he was also the musical director for the Schuberts. And people had gone to him, these friends of my folks, and said that they knew a young genius. See, I used to be a genius, then I outgrew it and became like everybody else. And he heard songs that I had written, melodies I had written, and arranged for me to play for J.J. Schubert. My father at that time was a builder. He was putting up an apartment house in Brooklyn, and the steel girders had just gone up. And one morning, about 2 o'clock in the morning, I heard the phone ring. Now, we never had phones ring 2 o'clock in the morning. And I heard my father's voice, very shocked and frightened. Apparently, he thought some terrible thing had happened. A steel girder had fallen, had collapsed, something, and somebody got hurt. And it turned out that it was Harold Stern at the Schubert office. This is when they conducted their business. They would start after curtain time, after the shows were over, have a bite, sit down in their office and start conducting business. So this was 2 o'clock in the morning, and they would go on for a few hours, and that's what happened. Harold Stern discussed me with the Schuberts and J.J. Schubert. I'd love to hear him play. I'd love to hear his songs. And Stern was calling up to make an appointment for me to play the next night at 2 o'clock in the morning.
At 2 o'clock in the morning. It didn't seem like anything to him.
I was delighted because it meant I wouldn't have to go to school the next day. Or the day after, because I'd have to recover from staying up so late. And I went down there. I was brought there with my first lyric writer, who was a friend of my brother's, and played, I don't know, we had maybe 40 songs or 30 songs written. Today they would
really
be,
even at that age, and that was about 15. You were 15, I guess.
I was 15 and a half, somewhere in that area.
And you already had 40 songs.
Well, I used to write 20 a day. You know, everything sounded good to me then. It's when you get older that you begin to have some perspective and taste.
Do you feel a warmish, kind of glowish, kind of peculiarish sensation?
No, it's a sort of quiverish, shiverish, flibberty gibberish sensation.
Does it make you feel hummingbirds in your heart?
Butterflies in me feet.
Bees in your bonnet.
Stars in me britches.
It makes you want to dance.
Well, I hadn't noticed that.
And sing.
It does. Something sweet, something sort of grandish sweeps my soul when thou art near. My heart feels so sugar candish, my head feels so ginger beer. Something so dairish, so I don't care-ish, stirs me from limb to limb. It's so terrific, magnificent, delish to have such an amorish, glamorish a dish. We could be, oh, so bright and groomish. Skies could be so bluish blue. Life could be so loving bloomish if my wishes could come true. So cher, cher, la femme.
Why should I relinquish me as ish when I simply relish this swellish condish?
I might be manishish or mouseish. I might be a fowl or fish, but with thee I'm Eisenhowsish. Please accept my proposition.
You're under my skinnish, so please be givenish, or it's the beginnish of the finish of a me.
Ella Logan and David Wayne from the original cast recording of Finian's Rainbow performing Something Sort of Grandish, a song by lyricist Kip Harburg, and the subject of today's edition of Anything Goes, composer Burton Lane.
Anyway, we had all these songs, and the Schuberts fell in love with it. Actually, J.J. Schubert. I hadn't met Lee Schubert yet. And we were given a contract to write Greenwich Village Follies, which was going to star James Barton.
Mm-hmm. When did you first sit down at a piano?
Well, I started to, the first time I sat down at piano, I couldn't play. We had a player piano. I used to pump it with my feet. But I started to take lessons when I was about 7 or 8, and uncles and aunts of mine said that my father was crazy for having me take lessons. I was too young. And so that was called off. I took a few lessons, loved it, fell in love with music immediately, and then my lessons stopped because everybody thought I was too young. So I didn't pick up again until I was about 10 or 11. I was put under contract, and I was kind of following in a strange way in the footsteps of George Gershwin, who also had been under contract to Remix. In fact, I was getting, when I started, I got $2.50 or more a week than he did. I was getting $17.50 a week.
Oh, my.
So that was a big deal.
Were people like George Gershwin your gods in those days?
Yes. I fell in love with George's music long before I met him. And, in those days, there were so many great writers. To go to theater in those days was, I guess, the greatest excitement of my life.
Do you remember the first show you ever saw?
Yes, it was a show. The first show I saw was a show. It was what they used to have summer reviews. They only would play the summer. And I saw one review called Keep Cool. And the only thing I can remember about it at all is that they had one scene that was supposed to take place during a war where a guy comes out with a sign on his head which said spy. That's the only thing I remember. My first book show that I saw, the first one I ever saw, was a show by Rodgers and Hart called Dearest Enemy.
Certainly.
And, of course, Dick and Larry were giants, and that time they hadn't become giants yet, but they were on their way. And they had some lovely songs in that show.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, you know, I just fell in love, madly in love with the theater. And in those days, to go to a theater and just to hear the orchestra start the overture and begin to hear one original tune, I say original, I mean original, not what we hear today. It seemed like everybody was, maybe the word to try to impress other people, other people who were also writers, with their invention, their creativeness was a stimulant. Mm-hmm. And George, to go to a Gershwin show and just hear the excitement of new rhythms and new music and new harmonies, no tune ever sounded like anybody else's. You know, it was their original stamp. Yeomans, Dick Rogers, George and Ira, Frimmel, Romberg, you know, these were, and Jerry Kern, of course, giants. They were just fabulous composers. Mm-hmm. And there was a great excitement about the musical theater in those days. The books were terrible. All the books were terrible. But the music was inspiring.
I look at you, glory be. Something in your eyes I see. Soon begins bewitching me. It's that old devil moon that you stole from the skies. It's that old devil moon in your eyes. You and your glance make this romance too hot to handle. Stars in the night blazing their light can't hold a candle to your razzle-dazzle. You got me flying high and wide on a magic carpet ride full of butterflies inside. Wanna cry on a queen, wanna laugh like a loon. It's that old devil moon
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Wasn't it Ira Gershwin who introduced you to Yip Harburg?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Well, I met George and Ira, and the family kind of took a liking to me, and I was very young, and they asked me to come around all the time. And they would have open house every Sunday, and everybody in the world would be there. Mm. And this was a tremendous experience for me. George had a studio. They lived in a brownstone just off 103rd Street. Off Riverside Drive on 103rd Street. And on the second floor, there was a living room, and they had two pianos, two grand pianos in the living room. And then George had a piano up in the studio. But in the living room, I would come there, and George would say, "Have you written any new tunes?" And I'd say, "Yes." And I'd play it, and he would sit down at the other piano and play two pianos. And then he would play something he just wrote.
He would just improvise with you?
He would improvise with me, yes, and then I would improvise with him.
Uh-huh.
And I can't recall those days. You know, I mean, I can't, to try to relive them is almost impossible so long ago, but they were wonderful.
Yeah.
They were just wonderful. And then it was Ira, of course, who introduced me to Yip. And Yip and I started to write a few songs together, but Yip really had to earn a living. He had gone broke in the electrical appliance business. And he was working at that time with Vernon Duke, Johnny Green, Jay Gorney, and me. And we wrote a few songs together, and I would hear the songs he was writing with others. And that's where our friendship and our work started.
The early 30s were really an amazing period for you. You were a teenager, still a teenager, and you had made contribution to four musical revues that were all on Broadway in the same period of time,
right.
Basically 1930, 31. And they were Three's a Crowd, The Third Little Show, Singing the Blues, and the Earl Carroll's Vanities, which basically you wrote the entire score for.
That's
with Harold,
right.
Adams. And, do you recall those days with fond memories? I mean, they must have been great times.
Well, yeah, I tell you, it's hard to remember anything. So much was happening. I remember the excitement I felt being around the Gershwins. That was exciting for me. Those early work years, are kind of vague. They're not vivid in my mind. One part, I would say, is more vivid than the others, and that was when I did some songs with Howard Dietz for Three's a Crowd.
Three's a Crowd, yeah.
I also became I was the pianist for the principals in that show. And I wanted to do that because I wanted to see how a show is put together. And because I was so young, Dietz liked to have me around, and Max Gordon, who was the producer of the show, when they had their production meetings, I was always invited to be there, and I loved it because I was learning.
Yes.
Gave me a chance to hear what was going on, you know, behind the scenes, so to speak.
When you're walking in the woods, every kiss will do you good, and besides,
sides that keeps you out in the open air. When we're kissing, let's agree, only God can make a tree. And the grass is like a cat, but with room to stay.
Hammocks are handy.
Get along. We'll do what we do indoors, with perhaps a few encores. And besides, it keeps you out in the open air. No walls or ceiling, locking love in. We like the feeling, one touch of nature making us sin. All the birds will shout tweet tweet, watching us will be their treat. And besides, it keeps you out in the open air.
Forget all your books on how to make love and put into action what you're thinking of. You know what to do, so why don't you do it? Forget all your books and starting to learn by giving me kisses that I will return. You know what to do, so why don't you go to it?
I'll admit I don't know anyone nicer, so when you give your orders, I will answer aye, aye, sir.
A look in my eyes. To do it, go to it, just do it. Practicing up on you in the open air.
Two songs from one of composer Burton Lane's earliest shows, Three's a Crowd, which first appeared in 1930. You heard off the Ben Bagley Everyone Else Revisited album, Out in the Open Air, and Arthur Siegel performing Forget All Your Books. Now back to a pre-recorded interview with composer Burton Lane.
How did you team up with Harold Adamson? Because he was your primary collaborator in those early days.
Yes. Well, it was a kind of a strange thing. I met some agent, and I can't remember his name now, who wanted me to meet a certain lyric writer, and made an appointment for me to be in his office. And I got there, and there was a lyric writer who he had made an appointment with to meet another composer. And when the other guy didn't show up, and the lyric writer I was supposed to meet didn't show up, he said, well, you might as well meet each other.
Oh, that's amazing.
So Harold and I met. And we started to write a number of songs together. He was a darling fellow. I liked him a lot. He was a very sound lyric writer, and we stayed together for many years.
And it was really with Harold Adamson that you went out to Hollywood.
Right.
Was it Irving Berlin who...
His
was
publishing
his company,
firm.
Yeah.
His company.
That sent you to Hollywood.
Sent us to California for a six-week gamble.
That's what they called it?
That's what it was. It was 6 weeks. They gave us I think we were each getting $75 a week. Plus a modest expense account, very modest, extremely modest. Mm-hmm. So we got an apartment out there, and through a fluke, within a couple of days that we were there, we found ourselves on the lot at Metro. And the first songs that we wrote and had in pictures were three songs that we had written for Dancing Lady.
Right, and that was
a big hit. That was my first big song hit, was Everything I Have Is Yours. Actually, we had started that song before we went to Hollywood.
Uh-huh. For a show?
No, we just were writing songs. We had it half finished. And the strange thing is when I got out there, and when we got out there, within a day or two, I called a friend of my brother's, His name was Leonard Spiegelgass. In fact, his name is still Leonard Spiegelgass. Leonard was a writer. And when he heard that I was there, he said, well, what are you doing tonight? And I said, well, we haven't any plans. I think it was about two nights after we got there, California. He said, well, come on over after dinner. He said, I'm having some guests for dinner. And Harold and I went over there. At that dinner party was a fellow by the name of Alan Rifkin, who was teamed with Pinky Wolfson, if I remember the name correctly. They had done the screenplay for Dancing Lady. And when he heard some of our songs, he said, we're in terrible trouble. We need a ballad for our picture, Dancing Lady, which is shooting. They were already shooting. And it stars Joan Crawford, and David Selznick is producing the picture. I knew the name of Crawford, but I didn't know any other name he was talking about. So we played him half the song of Everything I Have Is Yours. He said, gee, that sounds promising. So I said, we'll go home and we'll finish it. He says, can you be out at the studio tomorrow at 12 o'clock? He says, that you better be good because we've been thrown out before and Selznick gets very mad if we don't bring him something. You know, we've attempted to get a song into this spot a few times. Oh. And he says, Selznick gets furious if it's bad. So I said, I don't know whether it's good or bad at this point, but we'll try. So we went home that night and we finished the song and brought it out. And they went mad for the song the next day.
How terrific.
And this opened up a whole new horizon for us.
Within days of arriving, you'd already established
yourself. We had established ourselves. And then we were invited to L.B. Mayer's, I guess it was his 50th birthday party in Santa Monica, where every star in Hollywood attended that party. And just, like a week and a half before, we were in New York without a dream of ever getting to California. I mean, it was the furthest thing from either one of our minds.
Boy.
And here we are a week and a half later, not only in Hollywood, but at MGM, at L.B. Mayer's 50th birthday party, surrounded by every star, you know, it was like being in a...
And being about 21 years old, too.
It was like a fairy tale, you know.
Everything I have is yours. You're part of me. Everything I have is yours. My destiny. I would gladly give the sun to you if the sun were only mine. I would gladly give the earth to you and the stars that shine. Everything that I possess, I offer you. Let my dream of happiness come true. I'd be happy just to spend my life waiting at your beck and call. Everything I have is yours, my life, my all. The more I'm with you, the more I can see my love is yours alone. You came and captured a heart that was free. Now I've nothing left I call my own. Everything I have is yours. Oh, you're part of me. Everything I have is yours. My destiny. I would gladly give the sun to you if the sun were only mine. I would gladly give the earth to you and the stars that shine. Everything that I possess, I offer you. I'd be happy just to spend my life waiting at your beck and call. Everything I have is yours, my life, my all.
Ruth Etting performing Everything I Have Is Yours, written for the 1933 film Dancing Lady by Harold Adamson and Burton Lane. When did you start to work with Frank Lesser?
I was on the contract to Paramount in 1937 and 1938. And when my option came up at the end of my first, I was there for 2 years, after the first year, an agent, my agent, brought two writers to Paramount and wanted to get my opinion. He thought they were pretty good, and he wanted to get my opinion of what I thought of them before he submitted them. Mm-hmm. And he brings in Frank Lesser and a writer called Manning Sherwin. Manning Sherwin wrote lovely tunes, but Frank Lesser's lyrics just bowled me over. I just went crazy when I heard his lyrics. And the head of the studio was a good friend of mine, Lou Gensler at that time. Lou had been a songwriter. And I went to the front office. I said, I've just heard a team of writers. The lyrics are sensational, absolutely sensational. And helped get Frank his first contract. In fact, they both got a contract. They were given a 10-week contract with options to see how it would work out. And this is kind of a cute observation, a cute story. There was a shortage of offices, and Frank would use my office and Manning Sherwin. I came in the day after they signed the contract, and there's a guy measuring Frank for shorts, for shirts, for suits. He went absolutely wild the minute he had his contract. Before that, he had been broke. He had been terribly broke. After I had heard him, Frank called me up and said, come over to my place. I'd like to show you some lyrics. And I found out then for the first time that he and Sherwin had not been getting along.
Oh.
And it looked like they were not going to continue working together. And I was sitting there, I had gone there after my dinner, and when suddenly, Frank was married to Lynn Lesser at that time. Frank said, have you had dinner? And I said, yes. He said, you sure you won't join us? And I said, no, I won't have anything. Here's what they had for dinner. They took out an apple, and they sliced it in half, and they were going to give me a piece of that if I hadn't had mine. They each ate half and one can of baked beans. I mean, that's how broke these people were. They were really
that's amazing.
Flat, you know.
It's hard to imagine Frank Lesser.
And the minute he got the contract, he was being measured for, not that he was going to make a fortune, you know, not yet. But the change was so dramatic. It was funny.
That is funny. Was College Swing the first picture that you did write with him?
I don't remember the names of the pictures. It might have been, but we had some success with three or four songs in a very short period of time.
Terrific stuff with him. I mean, I love How'd You Like to Love Me, the song that Bob Hope and Martha Ray sang.
Yeah,
well,
let me tell you about How'd You Like to Love Me, because that's a kind of a tragic story. There was a performer, I don't know whether you would remember her, and I called Lydia Roberta.
Oh, I know the name, yeah.
She was, I don't know, Yugoslavian or Hungarian. She had been in a show which I had seen on Broadway. It was Harold Allen's first show. And the song she sang was Sweet and Hot. Mm-hmm. And she used to do a thing with a sweet, hot, got to be sweet, got to be hot. And it was used in a very humorous way. So when we were given the assignment of writing a song for her, I said, we should get something that has a in it. And we came up with, how'd you like to love me? How'd you like it? So she could get some fun out of it. And we wrote this song, and I was told by the studio to one day to go over to her apartment and teach it to her. So I went there, and she lived in a very modest building, and I rang the doorbell, and there was no answer. And I rang, and there was no answer. And I rang, and there was no answer. I said, see, this is, I'm sure I have the right place. Checked it all out, and I went back to the studio. And late that afternoon in the papers, Lydia Roberta was found dead in her apartment at this hour. Oh, and that's how Martha Ray took her place in the film.
Oh, my.
Yeah, it was. So that was very upsetting because she was a darling girl and had such a, you know.
Yeah, the recordings of her are I have a record.
She had
of
such
hers.
Quality, and she was on her way to becoming a big star.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the history of that song. Anyway, the song
don't
did
play
become
the song after that story.
Well, the song became a pretty big song with yeah. Bob Hope and Martha Ray doing it, and it was a marvelous lyric. Frank,
you had so many. I mean, there's so many wonderful songs that you two wrote together. Ladies in Love with You yeah. from Some Like It Hot, and
I Hear Music.
Later on, and yeah.
And a lot of people have come to me with, they've heard, it's been on television a number of times, Dancing on a Dime.
Yeah.
Do you know the song?
Yes, I do. Yeah, it's a beautiful song from that film of that
yeah,
name.
Yeah, right.
How'd you like to love me? How'd you like it? How'd you like to kiss me? How'd you like it? Could you kind of care? Could you learn to part your hair my way? How'd you like to love me? On the level, how'd you like to miss me? Like the devil, would you be so kind as to keep me on your mind all day? I told my doctor, my lawyer, to see what they think. But the moment they saw you, were they tickled pink? So how'd you like to love me? And no other, how'd you like to drop in? Meet my mother, how'd you like to toothbrush a hanger right alongside mine?
How'd you like to love me? There's a question, how'd you like to work on my digestion? Would you be so bold as to nurse me through a cold next May? How'd you like to love me? That's a honey, pick me off my neckties. Save my money, would you rise and rant if I beat you to the bath each day? I need a doctor, a lawyer, a keeper of books, a bridge partner, nursemaid, an angel who cooks. So how'd you like to love me? There's an ocean, how'd you like a cottage? By the ocean, I could let my hair down and you could let your cold cream shine. How'd you like it? As for me, I'd like it fine.
Take a letter. How'd you like to love me?
Does she mean it?
How'd you like to kiss me?
What a racket.
Could you kind of fall, hang my picture on your wall to say?
How'd you like to love me?
Oh, boy.
How'd you like to miss me?
Oh, boy.
Would you go so far as to be my guiding star each day?
Oh, buddy. I told my doctor, my lawyer, to be what they think. By the moment they saw you, were they pickled pink?
So how'd you like to love me? Are you listening?
How'd you like a license and a christening?
A baby boy with my brain.
A daughter with a mouth like mine. Woo-hoo-hoo. How'd you like it? As for me, I'd like it fine.
If there's a gleam in her eye each time she straightens your tie, you'll know the lady's in love with you. If she can dress for a date without that waiting you hate, you'll know the lady's in love with you. And when your friends ask you over to join their table, the
that she picks a faraway booth or two.
Well, sir, here's just how it stands. You've got romance on your hands because the lady's in love with you. If you've been traveling by plane,
but she begs you to please take the train,
betcha 3-1 the lady's in love with you.
And if she wires every day,
no, she hasn't got a darn thing to say,
you're a cinch, the little lady's in love with you.
And Sunday night, when you take her to see a movie, two loges, please.
Darling, darling, the balcony seats will do.
Well, sir, that's just how they act.
You might as well face the fact.
Yes, sir.
The lady's in love with you.
For you.
I never dreamed of making love with so many people near. Now I never dreamed of making love, but love is here. Isn't this sublime? We're dancing on a dime. The crowded floor is perfect for a nice romantic time. Oh, how can I help but hold you tight here in a warm embrace? There isn't an inch of space for being discreet, so I repeat, isn't this sublime? This dancing on a dime, we're hand in glove, the picture of a romance in its prime. Now, darling, I guess I'd better confess, for I knew it all the time, that I'd be close to you dancing on a dime.
Four songs written by Frank Lesser and Burton Lane in the late 30s, early 40s. You heard Martha Ray and Bob Hope sing How'd You Like to Love Me from the film College Swing, followed by Bob Hope once again and Shirley Ross singing The Lady's in Love with You from a film entitled Some Like It Hot. The last two songs were both from the film Dancing on a Dime, and featured Peter Lynde Hayes in the original cast singing I Hear Music, followed by Johnny Desmond from a Ben Bagley Frank Lesser revisited album singing the title song from Dancing on a Dime.
Ooh,
You've been listening to part one of a four-part look at the career of legendary composer Burton Lane. Associate producer Jeff London. Anything Goes Backstage with Broadway's Best is produced and hosted by Paul Lazarus. For more information, visit anythinggoespl.com. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to rate and follow us. Thanks for listening.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.